The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, given on November 8, 1999, in Newcastle, England.
And the topic I want to talk about is the topic of freedom. It's not difficult to gather material on almost any topic from Prabhupada's writings and talks by all these computer retrieval systems. But what to do with all the material, that's not so easy to find a purpose for it that is accurate with Prabhupada's Siddhanta. And it is an interesting presentation, and maybe even something new. I'll tell you how I got this idea to talk about freedom. I remember the moment it came to me, not full blown, but a little bit. I was taking prasadam, and suddenly I thought about freedom in connection with ISKCON's talks about Guru Tattva, by which I mean some of the resolutions that the GBC passed, for example, that Srila Prabhupada is understood as the preeminent Shiksha Guru for all the devotees, and definitions of and increased appreciation for Shiksha Gurus, and at the same time increased awareness of specialty of Diksha Guru, and even Krishna, understanding Krishna as original Guru, and so on. I thought that hardly anything had been said about the freedom of a person in accepting his Guru. And it somehow caught my interest. I don't have any developed paper to present to you about it. In fact, in gathering material about freedom, that original idea of freedom in connection with the Guru just kind of dropped out. But maybe in the course of talking today, it can come back in. It was just the point that a person has to pick his spiritual master. Even such a, for example, we might say that you have no choice. You must accept that Krishna is the Guru or that Prabhupada is the Guru. But the fact is that there's only a teeny, teeny amount of people in the world who out of their free will do accept this. Most people don't accept Prabhupada. They don't accept Krishna. So their choice has been free. Everyone else's choice has been to not accept them. So therefore, we should appreciate that our choice remains free, and is something that we continue to exercise, and no one can take it away from us, even if it is the conclusion of the absolute truth. We have to agree to it. So that's a little remark about how I started thinking about freedom. But then I developed it more. Prabhupada said he was a freedom lover about himself. He made that remark when he was confined to his bed in Vrindavan in his last weeks, and he wanted to get out and travel and preach. So I'm also in favor of freedom, and I will try to advocate it in making presentation, but in a responsible way, so that we can get a good feeling for it as a vital thing. I don't want to just balance it to death with the other side of freedom, which is the necessity to restrict freedom. But we'll talk about that too. So I also try to restrict myself to a very small number of quotes, so I won't be doing a lot of quote reading. But I did assemble a small amount, and I put them under four categories. First, I'll read you the headings that I gave to the categories. Now, service has freedom in exchange. And this is the more general, heavy, and important consideration. You can say the philosophical consideration, that in its essence, bhakti is a free exchange. So I'll be reading those, but that's the category. And number two is a specific focus on Krishna at the end of Bhagavad Gita, where he says to Arjuna, "Now you may choose what you want to do." A little exploration of that. And then third category, Srila Prabhupada and his disciples, volunteers, as he calls them. What is the nature of the devotees as volunteers? And then fourth, and this is the compromise to some degree, that there's a practice whereby we come to the spontaneous stage of freedom. We'll discuss that. All right. Even the quotes that I've picked, I've underlined only parts of them. And I'll read that and then make a few comments as I go along. And I think when I finish each of these four categories, I'll stop for questions rather than wait to the end of the whole talk. Transcendental loving service, this is a purport, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text 33. Transcendental loving service is never to be compared to forced service of the material world. They shudder at the thought of service because they have no knowledge of the transcendental position. In transcendental loving service, the servitor is as free as the Lord. The Lord is swarat, or fully independent, and the servant is also fully independent, or swarat, in the spiritual atmosphere because there is no forced service. A reflected glimpse of such service is experienced in the service of the mother unto the son, that's in this world, the friend's service unto the friend, or the wife's service unto the husband. These reflections of service by friends, parents, or wives are not forced, but are due only to love. Here in this material world, however, the loving service is only a reflection. The real service is, or service in Swarup, is present in the transcendental world, in association with the Lord. The very same service in transcendental love can be practiced in devotion here. What I'll be getting at later, but it occurs to me now, I'll be getting to it when we discuss Prabhupada's disciples as volunteers, is that we should always keep this in mind, that service is free, and so those who are conducting the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement shouldn't force devotees to do service, but you try to bring out from them the free inclination to serve the Lord and instruct about it. You know, we could instruct somebody that you're not free. Like if somebody is in prison, the guards tell him, if he shows the least inclination towards freedom, look, you know, you're just nothing in here. There's no God in here. You just have to do what I say. So you better understand that, and give him a good slap, just to impress him that you don't think you have any freedom. That's the philosophy. That's the reality. But in devotional service, of course, there's no question of slapping anybody, or sometimes the anti-cultists think like that, that there are big gates around cults and people are brainwashed to stay here. But even the teaching should be presented in such a way as, oh, welcome to Krishna consciousness. This is a place where we render service to Krishna freely. You can evoke your own eternal nature of free loving service to Krishna by practicing Krishna consciousness. It shouldn't be presented in a warped way that, oh, welcome to the Krishna consciousness. Here we're forcing you to do this for your own good. These are the teachings that we're reading here. And here's one of my all-time favorites, and it's probably a lot of devotees' favorites, and it's like a hymn of freedom, describing the great free flying spaceman Narada. At the end of chapter 6 of the first canto, Narada Muni took leave of Vyasa, and vibrating on his Veena instrument, he left to wander at his free will. And the purport says, every living being is anxious for full freedom because that is his transcendental nature. We can just imagine the extent and unlimitedness of Narada's freedom, which is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. There is no reason or obligation for his traveling, and no one can stop him from his free movement. Similarly, the transcendental system of devotional service is also free. It may or may not develop in a particular person, even after he undergoes all the detailed formulas. Similarly, the association of the devotee is also free. That means that you can perform bhakti, but you might not get the result of bhakti. Bhakti doesn't have to reciprocate. And you may want to be with a devotee, but a devotee may not appear before you. He's free. Bhakti's free. One may be fortunate to have it, or one may not have it after thousands of endeavors. Not just that you're free or not to perform Krishna consciousness, but Krishna consciousness is free whether it comes to you or not. Therefore, in all spheres of devotional service, freedom is the main pivot. Pivot is the point on which everything revolves. So everything is freedom. Without freedom, there is no execution of devotional service. We can think like that, oh well, if Krishna desires, he will give me his mercy. Krishna is free. And then from my side, I think, well, I want to serve Krishna. The freedom surrendered to the Lord does not mean that the devotee becomes dependent in every respect. To surrender unto the Lord through the transparent medium of the spiritual master is to attain complete freedom of life. These are subtle thoughts. To surrender, in other words, doesn't mean you become a robot. All right, I surrender. Now you tell me what to do. But now you really become free to exercise your will and your proclivity to serve Krishna. And I have one more purport under this category, which specifically focuses on how the Lord doesn't have to respond, as in the concept of karmakandiya, to your prayers. Revival of the dormant affection or love of God does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting, but it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving, transcendental service. So I hope by reading these, we're freed of concepts that Krishna consciousness is just a mechanical thing, or is something that somebody forces you to do. You have to be free of all kinds of concepts like that. Anyone want to question on these quotes or these points so far? Yeah, there are.
There's no obligation to say anything about it. It's also like the other side of the coin, which is a little, some people are nonchalant also, like inshallah, if God wills, then it will happen. What can I do? I'm like insignificant. So where's the balance there between like leaving everything and then actually doing something, and how far can you go forward to come to bhakti? Where does bhakti come to you?
Well, we should be eager. If not in this lifetime, in some future lifetime, to attain bhakti. We should also be aware that it's not a mechanical process, that if I do 10 things, then I'll get something back. But there's some relationship, the devotees say, between my lolyam, my eagerness, and Krishna's reciprocation. I become fertile ground for getting his mercy, which, as you say, he's free to give or not. So if I just think, oh, if luck will have it, I may get bhakti, that attitude is not very progressive towards getting it. So these are not contradictory. The eagerness for bhakti and the awareness that Krishna is free to give it is partly understood by being very patient and humble, Tanada peace and Ichina to Roy Vasavishina, that I'm very small, and let me just go on serving Krishna. All I want is just a tiny place, like a particle of dust at his lotus feet. But that I hanker for, to be in association of devotees, to serve the devotees. So he's eager, and he's coming forward in Krishna consciousness in those ways, but not pretentiously ambitious or thinking that he's a great devotee or something like that. That would be different than nonchalant. Take my sweater off.
Understanding that Krishna is a person.
When we say that Krishna doesn't have to respond, but he's a soft person, and he does respond. So we should come forward, and that's what the devotees tell us to do. It's the best I can answer that. Can you answer it yourself?
Complex.
Yeah. At least don't make it over simple, as just mechanical, and acknowledge that there is a relationship between your efforts and Krishna's. As they approach me, I reciprocate. But what it is not always so easy to understand, because ultimately he's Swarat. He can give or not. That is, you can't understand it, because God is inconceivable, and so he can make rain fall on one side of the building and not on the other side. He can give mercy to someone and someone else. Yes?
I think the example, not to say what the balance is, but I say Mangalati from the sun, that someone can look forward to that, or down your ass or whatever, but some part of the program might attack somebody and you really want to do that. Another part, you feel obliged to go to it. There's some kind of a balance in there. Some devotees would be enthusiastic to go because they want to go, others go because they think they ought to go one day. But to give an example of what you seem to be saying about freedom, having the design that and some of the devotees in Ireland first moved out of the temple, the ocean is finally the same in Dublin. And I flew in to there, so they let me stay at their place. I went back to their flat, and they had a morning program. But it was their own program, and it felt so nice to be a part of something. It was obviously something they really wanted to do. wasn't something they had to do.
Hmm.
And there was just a noticeable atmosphere that freedom was being. So what a beautiful thing that freedom is when somebody wants to do something with vision and to be allowed to be a part of it.
Right. Let me build up the more, as we get more references, then our discussions can build up. This is item number two, Krishna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. My dear Arjuna, I have given you all instruction. Whether you have understood it, and how are you going to follow? Have you decided to follow me? Just see. He does not say, I force you to follow. No. He asked him, now, have you decided to follow me? And he gives him full independence. Yatechasi tata kuru. Now I have given you all instruction. Now it is up to you. You can do whatever you like. So our position is always like that. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, or his bona fide representatives who come here, they can force you to go back to Godhead, but they do not do that. He simply said, now I have explained everything to you. Whatever you desire, you can do. Arjuna replied immediately, Karishye Vachanam Tava. Now I shall execute your order. That is Krishna consciousness. So, it's pretty clear so far what Krishna does in allowing Arjuna this space, as we say, to be himself and say whether he accepts Krishna. But now in a lecture that Prabhupada gave 1971, he goes even further to make us understand this. He explains a different verse, Sarva Dharmam Paryajamane Kam. Simply take me, Krishna says, but that we do not do. We ask Krishna, please let me do this. All right, do it. Yatechasi tata kuru. Krishna inquires from Arjuna after teaching him Bhagavad Gita. Now I have spoken everything to you. What you want to do, you can do. This is Krishna's proposal. Krishna says the best thing is that you take to Krishna, but Krishna gives you the opportunity, liberty, that whatever you do, whatever you like, you can do. Now it is your choice. Just like father and grown-up son, he says, my dear boy, you do like this. That is my opinion, but when the son says, no, I shall do like this, then the father says, all right, you can do whatever you like. So here, in this explanation, Krishna saying, do whatever you like, Arjuna, is kind of like a reluctant sanction for Krishna's anticipating Arjuna's less than surrendered position. Because remember, Arjuna has been less than surrendered throughout the Bhagavad Gita so far. So it's like Krishna saying, are you still, you're still not going to fight? You can do whatever you want. I've been lecturing to you so that you would fight, but now what do you want to do? It's up to you. You don't have to fight. But I told you, the best thing, I would like you to surrender to me. This is interesting, because at first I was thinking, when Krishna says, do whatever you like, that was a very excellent instruction. That's what Krishna really wants. He said, Arjuna, I don't care. You just do whatever you want. I just want you to make your free choice. But Krishna doesn't want Arjuna to make his free choice. And he doesn't want us. What did I write here? This shows us that free will can be misused, and Krishna doesn't want us to remain unsurrendered to him in the name of freedom. He wants us to actually give up our freedom. But we have to do it wholeheartedly or honestly, gradually. This point requires a lot of thought and facing reality. Am I ready to surrender? And then I, speaking for myself, I said I don't have all the answers to this. But at least we can see what Krishna was getting at here when he said, now Arjuna, what have you decided to do? He was ready to sanction Arjuna's second-class proposal. And he was very happy when Arjuna immediately gave the first-class reply. But that means, the first class reply means, I give up everything else and I'll just do whatever you want. And I don't think all of us are ready to do that. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna taught some karma yoga and other mixtures. So he said, whatever you like to do, you can do for Krishna. So we may have to honestly say, well, I do want you, Krishna, but first I have to dovetail some of my interests in your service. And let me come to you through this path gradually, or I don't think I can fight in this war. And Krishna will accept that. But sooner or later you have to come to this point. So would anyone like to comment on this or question? Krishna in Bhagavad Gita here saying to Arjuna, now I've taught you everything, what do you want to do? To allow them the real decision.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, it's so true. Krishna's a real father. I hope I presented it that way, not that he was being real heavy. I remember when I was only 17 years old, my father was a naval officer, and he signed me up to join the Navy, Reserve Navy program, and really railroaded me to do it. And I remember the night I signed the papers, and then we were driving home, and he said, you really want to do this? Do you feel all right about this? And it was so unlike my nature, the whole thing, and I'd just done it because I was so malleable to what he wanted, like so many boys are with a very strong father, a father figure. So where was the real chance? If he could have presented it that, you know, I think a naval career is my idea of what a son could do, it would be very pleasing to me. But you should feel free. And of course there are so many liberal fathers who do that. Especially, I think it happens more and more. That was the old way more, where children were raised. And they're given more freedom. But often they're not. Or they're given no guidance anyway. So to be given, which is almost as bad, to be given freedom, but no guidance of any kind. So you're saying you like that both from a father. And that's what Arjuna... And then Krishna is such a nice teacher and father that if Arjuna can't immediately do it, then Krishna has already given him gradual ways to reach the same point. As he said earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, if you can't do this complete surrender, then follow the rules and regulations. If you can't do that, then do that. So Arjuna can do all these other things to reach that point. And then Lord Chaitanya came later and said, oh, my dear sons, it's become very difficult for you. Now I give you an even easier method. Nevertheless, it's also inspiring that Arjuna, as an ideal Kshatriya also, by that point is so heroic, an ideal shishya, a disciple, and he says, yes, I'm ready, Father, Guru Dev, Supreme Lord, dear friend, I'm ready.
But in Arjuna's case, there was that chakra, there was that discipline, all the weapons of the demigods, probably the whole history behind them.
Yes.
He's a rishi in his previous life.
Hmm.
We're coming from background, so it's straight out of hell. And to make that quantum leap, to make that actual decision, it has to be either based on taste, or it can't just be based on the academic side of this study. It has to be some taste and obviously realization. And like, it goes back to the question you raised earlier about there's no obligation on either way, because freedom is pivot. So it's like in the case of the Pandavas, they made all these huge endeavors, went through so many trials and tribulations, and to reach that point of having to make that decision, facing the trials and tribulations, there obviously would have been so many doubts in our friend's mind. So we're on the right side and still we're getting the long end of the stick. In a sense, we're in a similar position, we're nearly on the right side, but you know, the forces of the Kali Yuga are so strong that to overcome that and get past that, and to actually have that faith to make that quantum leap, it seems to me.
The quantum leap to surrender to Krishna. We've been talking about that in connection with Govardhan Puj. I've been bringing out that as the main theme, in a sense, that Krishna asks them to defy the existing cosmic government and surrender to him instead. And they did, with great risk. And then Indra retaliated and Krishna protected. So I was saying, but how can we today do anything similar? So we've been discussing how it's really not possible in many cases for us to make the quantum leap. And we were reading some statements by Bhaktivinoda Thakur telling us how we can do it gradually and in parallel lines of material and spiritual life. So we've been talking about that. Let me go on to Prabhupada and his disciples, how he conceived of his disciples. Do you mean to say that here the boys who are giving service, I mean to say, to the personality of Godhead Krishna, are not enjoying? Without enjoying, can they serve free? They are giving service free. Whenever you go to render some service, you immediately demand some money. But here in this temple, so many young boys, they're giving service free. Not only that, whatever they're earning, they're also paying Krishna. And then another lecture. I don't pay them, neither they expect any payment. Otherwise, this movement would not have proceeded so quickly. Another lecture. I have not bribed them, neither have I any money to pay them. In a letter, he refers to Gopal Krishna. You are a willing volunteer. One question that comes up when we read this is a little painful in a sense, whether this spirit is lost, and if so, how did it become lost? That devotees give up materially rewarding careers and are willing to surrender to Krishna in a practical situation of living in a commune or Krishna conscious community where they don't get any kind of pay or material assurances. Prabhupada had a kind of high demand in these statements here, and a voluntary service. Certainly, a lot of it has vanished. I don't want to insinuate that Prabhupada was wrong here. We can also say times have changed. The young boys he's referring to have grown up, got married, have families to take care of, and so many things have changed that payment has to be, they have to get payment. And the temples and the money available is not there to pay them. But somehow, voluntary spirit of service is what a disciple is. A disciple isn't someone who gets paid for service. Perhaps now, any follower of Prabhupada, He has to spend more of his own time taking care of his own material needs, and then when he comes forward to serve Prabhupada and doesn't expect that Prabhupada will give him material remuneration. And there are some workers, just like this small band of devotees in this temple, low-budget temple as it is, and other temples, who are running the temple in according to this. Let's be volunteers, and see what Krishna arranges for our maintenance, as we maintain the temple, and we who aren't doing that should try to help them to keep that fire, that torch burning of the volunteer servants that Prabhupada describes here. But this is, I brought it up because it occurred to me as part of a topic of freedom. Anyone want to comment on it? Yes. Take some wage from the temple? Well, I think it's very individual. I'm also not a manager, so I don't want to talk in. I think I can be safe to say that one of the principles is for those devotees, there may be few who are willing to do some of the major services in the temple. They can receive some kind of remuneration for it. And there may not be so many of them. There's been like a major shift that took place, and at one point there were many grihasthas living in the temple, and then they weren't doing that much service, and it was an awkward period, the period during which they moved out. Awkward in the sense that the authorities were sometimes asking them to move out, and they were also feeling bitter that why are we being asked to move out? We came here giving everything. But certainly those who stay would be those who are like, almost like brahmacharis, and who are doing the main things like the deity worship or the main management and everything. The temple cannot afford to let them go. They're the ones who are holding the temple together. They're the main brahminical priests. So it's almost just incidental that they're married. If their grihastha ashram that becomes more prominent, then they may have to release some of those duties, and then they also will move out. But if they don't, then there's nothing on principle wrong with their taking money that was donated by outsiders for the maintenance of the temple, but that money should also be shown and accounted for, that your patrons, you gave this money and it was spent like this. Let me not dwell on that. So here's the last category. Practicing to come to the spontaneous stage. As soon as one hears the name of Krishna, spontaneously he should be ready to serve him. That's pure devotion, not forced. In the beginning we have to force and say, you rise early in the morning, there's Mangalartri, you have to perform it. But when this function will be done spontaneously, oh, this is the time to offer Mangalartri to my Lord. That is wanted. That is wanted. Not that it's a heavy burden. So this is an admittance. I said I would advocate freedom. But here's the other side, that in the beginning, if you don't feel the free principles of wanting to serve Krishna, then the guru or his representative may apply some, we call it force, but I have a nice excerpt how this force is even different than material force. I just heard on a tape Prabhupada was talking, he wasn't using the word freedom but pleasure, and he was talking about the limits of it. One of the devotees said, we shouldn't have to just serve God, we should be able to fulfill our own pleasures. And Prabhupada said, what philosophy is this? He said, a child wants to follow his pleasure, but the parents have to restrict him. And then he told how he, as a child, didn't like to go to school. He dwelt on that story, that his father would indulge him, and the mother would complain, and then the father would say, is it true that you didn't go to school? And he said, I would say, yes, I didn't. Oh, he said, and then Abai would say, I'll go tomorrow. And his father would say, all right, then you'll go tomorrow. But his mother was more strict, so she hired a man whose job it was to bring him by force to school. And Prabhupada said, I thought it was pleasure to play all day. So that's not approved freedom. The children will get hurt by that freedom. So here's from Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Shyamasundar and Prabhupada are talking. Prabhupada says, Shyamasundar says, our parents and other materialistic people are being forced to undergo austerities by nature. Prabhupada, that is forced austerity. That is not good. Voluntary austerity will help. Our austerity is very nice. We chant Hare Krishna, dance, and Krishna sends us very nice foodstuffs and we eat. Why are your people not agreeable to such austerity? So, if we agree that we can't always do just what we like and be free, but Prabhupada is saying, even the things that we accept in Krishna consciousness as forced, it's a nice force, at least compared to what the materialists have to take as forced. And he's saying, what's the matter with the non-devotees? Why don't they accept these nice austerities? And the phrase is used here, voluntary austerity. Which gets me back to my main point, that that everything is free. And each one of us has to take that responsibility to agree that I'll do this. Not because my husband or even guru is making me do it, but he's telling me to do it, and I decide that I will do it. Even God is not forcing me. He's saying, I told you everything, now do you want to do it or not? So bhakti is not that, why are you chanting your rounds? God forced me, my guru forced me. No, they told you how good it is to chant, and you decided that you would do it. And you accepted them as your teachers. Even if you want to express it that way, that, well, I surrender to the guru, and you have to do everything he says. That's the nature of the relationship. But it was up to you to surrender to him, and it continues to be up to you. and it continues to be up to you to surrender to Krishna or Krishna's Maya. You can stay awake or you can fall asleep. Okay, any other remarks about freedom? Talking about.
So, you
yeah.
I was thinking if you were talking about this thinking, there seems to be that the balance is actually so clear. It seems to be like the balance in itself, because you discussed earlier. There seems to be that difference that the body is free to give this service in Krishna's to accept the service.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the opposite of material business. In preparing for the Govardhan Puja, I read in Hridayananda Maharaj's purports, and he was also saying the bhakti is free, and he referred to the karmakandiya as what was the phrase that he used? Not like the karmakandiya, which is a material coincidence of interest. So, you know, I like your price, and you like my goods. So it appears that we agree, and that's a balance. But with bhakti, I want to serve you, says the Lord, and the devotee says, I want to serve you. It's both freedom. Bhakti is given because bhakti is our nature. But if I have a nature but I don't awaken it or I don't use it, then my freedom is not being exercised, you could say. So what good is it? Everyone, according to Krishna conscious teachings, everyone is a spirit soul, so everyone has dormant love of God, but it's perverted or it's expressed in different ways, so it's as good as not having it. So you say, oh, he has it, so what's the sense of freedom? But it's as if he doesn't have it. It's all given away, sucked up in material interests. He's lost it. So that's just what happened. And then eventually, by a long process, he may gain it again. It could be a very long process through evolution of living species where there's no love of God, no bhakti in the animals and so on. And it finally comes up where there's possibility of bhakti. Bhakti is only by contact with the pure devotee, and then it comes back. So the soul can lose its bhakti. Yeah.
When Prabhupada says that the consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind, is that in like in the pure sense that you understand what Krishna consciousness is? Because in the practicing stage, how can we appreciate that it's not an artificial imposition? It appears to be an artificial.
Krishna consciousness, that's from that talk. Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition in the mind. And then he goes on to say, but it's the natural energy of the soul. So what is your question?
That's true. We can accept that as true. But in the practical realization, understanding of daily life, it appears that we constantly have to be pushing and forcing ourselves to practice Krishna consciousness. But in the sense that it's not artificial, then why would we need to have support and push ourselves?
Mm. I think of that as like it reminds me of how the fact that I didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness until I met Prabhupada, and he's explaining that it's not, for example, a Hindu religion, that you're a Westerner and artificially I've come here and I'm trying to tell you that Krishna is your God and this is your scripture. It's not like that. Well, I'm teaching something different. I'm teaching that the nature of the soul is to love God and Krishna is the God of everyone. So love of Krishna is the natural energy of the soul. You're talking about the dynamics of forgetting Krishna from moment to moment. It may be something active that we have to do to bring it to our mind again, but it's not artificial. It just indicates our fallen state. So it doesn't have to be so bad. If we have some regular service to Krishna that we're doing, we can keep Krishna on the mind more regularly by regularly chanting Hare Krishna and turning to our service. Then we'll remember that Pujari is always thinking, not artificially but naturally, oh, I have to go, I have to cook the next offering. I have to prepare for my preaching engagement. If we have a day full of Krishna conscious connected activities, they won't be artificially imposed on the mind. They'll be part of our consciousness, even before we're very spontaneous or very advanced. Right. And dance in ecstasy. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.